What's going on, everybody? This is Carson, also known as Mets Fan from YouTube. You're listening to the official Mets Weekly podcast hosted by four Mets fans who are brutally honest and don't hold back. Make sure to head over to our YouTube channel and follow us on TikTok for exclusive content on each platform. So with that being said, let's go Mets and enjoy the show. You know, it really is a shame that the Mets season ended five games in, because we would be talking about the playoffs with the way that they have been playing recently. But it just goes to show you that you should never judge a book by its cover. It's not how you start, it is how you finish. Looking at you, Frank. Wait, wrong Frank. Episode number 49 of Mets Weekly Podcast. Brutal honesty in the span of 60 minutes. And as Mike Francesa would say, back after this. Now, as for your usual house cleaning, make sure to subscribe to the Mets Weekly channel for the premiere of this very podcast every single Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, as well as all of those individual links that are in the description. Also, make sure to go to all those platforms after every single game, about 30 minutes after, for instant takeaways and reactions from our own Frank About Sports called the Mets Frankly Post Game. Aside from one unfortunate blemish this week, which we will eventually talk about, I can honestly say that the Mets are playing pretty good baseball.
I think that seeing them, what was the last time in a month? I mean, this is an interesting number to look up. The Mets won the series in Atlanta and Los Angeles in the same month. I feel like it's probably maybe never. I mean, because those just are two buildings that the Mets have struggled with so much. But here, I mean, they've done it. And like we've said, this team is nowhere near 100%. You don't have your best pitcher. You don't have J.D. Martinez. For the most part, Lindor hasn't really been a factor. The way they've been able to get so many different guys step up and contribute, that's something that they have not been doing in a long time. When you have more of this team effort, this is really what's going to carry you in a 162. I mean, I say it in all the recaps, but there's just a different feeling in the clubhouse. And maybe it's Mendoza, the energy that Mendoza expresses. I mean, when you look at the home run that Francisco Lindor hit and Mendoza gives him like that huge high five and like that yell with it, I feel like that kind of energy just rubs off on the players. And I feel like it's something we talked about with Buck last year, that just very serious, no emotion, it kind of showed with the team. But I just think with Mendoza, this team is playing looser. They're playing for one another. Baseball is a lot of a mental game. When it comes to the front office establishing talent, that's their job. But I think that if you could get the guys to be loose and do what they're capable of doing, that almost matters just as much as the X's and O's of who bats where, who comes in where, who plays where. Because, you know, we talked about the Mets had high expectations last year and they didn't come through. They had the talent to do it, but these guys had bad years. McNeil had a bad year. Marte had a bad year. A bunch of injuries. Like, they had so many things go wrong. It's like a totally different team. Like, this team is supposed to be worse than last year. But I already see these positive signs that we weren't seeing.
And that is a good point, obviously, with the leadership in the clubhouse being changed. Leadership in the front office, all of that stuff. I talked about it when they hired Carlos Mendoza. I said that they nailed this hire. That is one of the main reasons why. It's because he is an up-and-coming type manager. Hasn't managed before, but he had that experience in the New York area for a long time, and he's finally getting his shot. He knows what this type of environment is. Seeing him get so pumped up after a balk to give us the lead, I mean, come on, like, that is the type of emotion that New Yorkers want to see. Again, Stern said this at the beginning. He said that there are going to be growing pains. There are going to be ups and downs. The Mets are giving you, and we will get into it, just an all-around team effort every single night. And that's all that you really could ask for with a team that has lower expectations as compared to the World Series or bust team we had, where they threw just a bunch of money at, basically winning at will. So let's obviously get into what has been going on this week. And of course, we got to start with the games, as the Mets started the week to finish up a 6-game homestand against the Pirates on Monday night. Adrian Hauser got the start for the series opener, was solid through 5 innings, but ran into trouble in the 6th, going 5 1/3, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, 5 walks, 5 strikeouts on 95 pitches. Hauser's velocity sat at 92-93 and top 95 at a 58% usage, registering 10 total whiffs and inducing 11 ground balls to end his day. The Mets found themselves down 3-0 going into the 6th and got to work once again. Francisco Alvarez drew a bases loaded walk to make it 3-1. Francisco Lindor scored on a throwing error by right fielder Connor Joe to make it 3-2. And DJ Stewart tied the game with a pinch hit RBI double. Fast forward to the 8th, runners on 2nd and 3rd with 1 out. Harrison Bader smacked a 2-run double to give the Mets the lead and added insurance with aggressive base running to make it 6-3, leading the Mets to a game one victory to improve to .500 for the first time this season. On Tuesday night, Jose Quintana took the mound for game two of the series for the classic 5 innings of Mets starting pitching, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts on 93 pitches. Quintana's velo sat at 89-90 and top 91 at a 59% usage, registering 8 total whiffs to end his day. The Mets offense would rise late again in the 7th, down 1-0. Joey Wendell would tie the game on an opposite field double. The Mets would then take the lead on a balk by Pirates left-handed pitcher Jose Hernandez. Jeff McNeil will add insurance with an RBI double to make it 3-1 Mets, securing the Game 2 victory to push the orange and blue above .500 for the first time in 2024. And in the series finale on Wednesday afternoon, Luis Severino made his 4th start of the year and was great. 6 innings pitched, 5 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts on 96 pitches. Sevy's fastball sat at 95-96 and top 98 miles an hour at a 29% usage, registering 9 total whiffs to end his day. Down 1-0 in the 3rd, Starling Marte belted a 2-run shot to left center to give the Mets the lead, and they never gave it back. In the 6th inning, Tyrone Taylor added to the lead with a 2-run single, followed by a 2-run homer by Harrison Bader to make it 6-1 Mets. Francisco Alvarez reached on a fielder's choice to add another run, and Brandon Nimmo would plate 2 more to put the game out of reach, as the Mets completed their first sweep of the season, with the offense posting an 8.23 OPS with runners in scoring position, and the pitching staff surrendering just 4 earned runs the entire series.
Pittsburgh was coming into this series red hot. You know, they had a really good record to start off the season, but you know, what stands out to me is, like we were saying, just so many different guys contributing. I mean, you have to love, here comes DJ Stewart off the bench and just bam, you know, it ties up the game. Then you have, you know, Joey Wendell coming into the game and he comes through in the 7th inning. And, you know, what I love is, like we talked about with the fight of this team, that first game against Pittsburgh, when Pittsburgh goes up 3-0 in the 6th inning, bottom of the 6th, Mets get 3 runs. Like, it's just, a lot of times it's instant. Like, they fight, like, someone punches, they punch back really quick. And then, you know, it's kind of the same thing here, like, with the second game, where, again, it's just like, they find that punch. And the numbers are just so interesting as far as their scoring breakdown inning by inning. And, like, this team is on another level the 7th inning on offensively. I mean, we'll get into it more in the Dodgers series because it really stood out there. But it's just like, I don't know what it is. They just are really beating up on bullpens. You know, it could be more so just a matter of everyone constantly taking those good at-bats, and it just kind of wears pitchers down, and it just, then it kind of works out. You know, because you have, like, the bases loaded walks, you have the box bringing in runs, but it's just a matter of, like, kind of, you know, wearing down pitchers, just getting a lot of traffic on the bases, and then the pitchers making mistakes that are kind of leading to these opportunities, because they're not a team that's really just like a bunch of solo home runs and things like that. You know, they're doing it in a lot of different ways, you know, a lot of, you know, if you want to call it like small ball or old school offense, but it's getting the job done. And the bullpen, you know, especially Reed Garrett, oh my God, has he been amazing. I mean, he's got to be one of the storylines of the year. I mean, this guy has, and we're going to talk about more later, but he's bailed the Mets out constantly. I mean, a ton of times in only the first month. And again, I just hope it doesn't wear out. I think, you know, seeing him come in the 9th inning of the game was really interesting. We'll get to that. But again, it's just so many guys are just stepping up. I mean, you know, True Smith has a good April like always, but, you know, every day it just feels like it's a new hero. Their 7-9 is one of the best OPSs in the MLB. And that's that was our biggest critique all offseason was we were like, heavy. We know the
bottom half. What the fuck do we know? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's like bottom half of the order is going to do nothing. Those guys are a bunch of automatic outs. It's all going to be top of the order. And that hasn't been the case. And I think that's why, I mean, that's kind of what's really catapulted this team is like, again, getting these contributions from the guys you necessarily weren't expecting has really been what's kind of made this team much more complete. And that's what we talked about is that, like, yes, there was some talent, but they didn't have like that depth to really complete them. So we thought. But these guys have gone off to hot stretches, you know, and I don't think. Like I said, Harrison Bader's not going to stay around 300. But I think if these guys are just being...
No, he will.
As long as these guys are above average on the bottom half, I feel like the top half could kind of do their thing and be the good players that they are, that they'll just kind of... That's what would make them a winning team.
Listen, this was a series that we got on full display. Whenever an opponent scores, you just don't think that this team is ever out of a game. The other team scores first, the Mets respond, and then they take the damn game over and they finish it off. The bullpen has just been completely nails. And that obviously allows them to stage all of these comebacks with the starters having trouble going farther into games. And I got to see the third game. I got to see Severino. I think that he was the last guy I ever expected to go six innings, to be honest. Like, if we were talking about, like, the rarity of six innings, he would be the last guy. He's had a few control issues, I'd say, throughout this year, but he's still really been good for us, and I really do want to, you know, give a shout out to him, because the rest of the gang is a lot more sinker ballers pitching to contact. You know, they need a lot of different things to go right. And Severino, we know in spurts at his best, he definitely can give you these lights out performances. He hasn't been amazing, but he's definitely been a stellar part to this rotation. The Mets right now, there's not really much of a groove yet. I think that they're just kind of stringing things together and finding ways to win, seeing what these combinations look like with this offense that has been good. It's still a little suspect to me, I will say that, but with the offense being good, there is going to be a stellar point that goes into the middle of that batting order, hopefully on Friday, from what we have heard, in JD Martinez, just to back up this entire team, because once again, we have needed that. Francisco Lindor, even though he's picking it up, it's been rough. It has really been rough for Francisco Lindor. Pete has been in and out. You know, he's had a few hot streaks. He's had a few cold streaks. Nimmo is not fully there, but, you know, the eye is still there. He's still walking a lot. He's still getting on base.
These are just those other ways to generate offense when you're not a team that has, like, a ton of, like, massive home run hitters. Being on base for the other guys, and this is with Lindor struggling. This is with Alonso now starting to struggle. Like, if those guys are clicking too with Marte on base, I mean, again, that's how they get back to the team they were. You know, like McNeil is waking up a little bit. Like, you know, obviously the contributors they got from Beatty, we'll get to Alvarez at some point, but that's a recipe for actually having a decent offense.
And that brings me into the other point, of course, as to what I've really loved from the Mets is this isn't really a team that I don't think that it's really as ground ball heavy as it used to be, but this really has become a team that puts somebody on base. They try to take away the double play as much as they can by stealing. And that's what I really, really do love.
Even Nimmo. Nimmo has more stolen bases in a month than he would in a season. And again, the new rules help it. But you also, I mean, Joey Wendell has more stolen bases in a week than Luis Guillermo has in his career. I mean, you even had, like, Alvarez stole some bases. Bader's been stealing bases. Like, they've been aggressive. I mean, they were a little too aggressive in the last game of the Dodgers, but they've been aggressive on the base pass.
Yeah, you don't have power protection. That's the thing. You don't have power protection at this current moment. Yes, DJ Stewart has been really good, but he ain't power protection. You don't have your JD Martinez yet. And I really hope that does boost that's going to boost the lineup even more. And I think that you're going to see a little bit more of the sustainable production once he comes here. At this current moment, the one base outcomes, the station to station crap, that doesn't work. So if you are getting a one base outcome, you have speed, take off. You have the stolen base rules, take advantage of it. Put somebody in scoring position. That's how you can produce offense at an efficient rate. Is it going to Sustain? Probably not. But at this current moment, string your wins together before you get your top guns down the stretch of the season.
I mean, listen, stolen bases have been a proven formula since baseball began. You know, so I think that's something like if you need to have the players to do it. For me, with Wendell and Guillorme, there's similarities. I thought just the difference in speed alone made that move worth it. We always felt like Nimmo had the ability to do it. And I don't know if maybe him being in left field now maybe makes him feel like feels a little more fresh that he could start stealing bases. He doesn't have as much wear and tear in center field. But another thing that this team does is they bunt quite a bit, especially with the guys in the lower half.
Which
order.
Is stupid.
Omar Narvaez had a good bunt. But again, I think that you have to kind of utilize what you have. You can't be like, oh, we're going to be a team that tries to always knock the ball off the fence when we have a bunch of guys that can't do it. You know what I mean? It's like you have to kind of play to your strengths and like your identity. And I feel like that's what they've done. I don't see anything that's like, oh, wow, that guy's trying to be someone, a kind of player. He's not really that kind of player.
Of course, I understand that. Again, bunting's the stupidest thing ever. Never do that. Never give free outs to major league pitching. That's just the dumbest thing I could possibly think of. I don't know. I'm still a little uneasy about this offense. I just don't know how it's going to start up against big arms. Like Tyler Glasnow. I don't know. I think that they've really come together to find a lot of ways to win. It's definitely developed a very winning type of mentality in that clubhouse early. Carlos Mendoza, we didn't know what type of manager he was going to be. You know, I think that he has really been able to appeal to a lot of people in this clubhouse. And I think that that's really have been a big impact as to where they know that they could contribute and they know they could possibly win in the margins with the type of team that they have, whether it is the speed or athleticism. And like you said, as compared to last year, you had a lot of contact hitters, but they didn't do anything else. They were just going to be the stationary to stationary type of players. They were going to give you singles and set up the double play. Anything that takes away the double play, I'm all for it. The fact that they are doing it against highest strengths and schedule, it's very impressive. This does not look like an 0-5 team. And as for the second half of games this week, the Mets would travel west to sunny LA to take on the star-studded Dodgers. Sean Manaea took the mound for the series opener on Friday night, but the Mets offense attacked first and jumped all over Yoshinobu Yamamoto. DJ Stewart opened up the scoring with a solo shot to right, his third of the year, to make it 1-0 in the second. Harrison Bader would tack on another with a RBI single to make it 2-0 Mets. In the third, Pete Alonso would tack on yet another with an RBI single, and DJ Stewart would drive in another run on a sacrifice fly to give the Mets a 4-0 lead. But the Dodgers would fight back. An RBI single by Teoscar Hernandez to make it 4-1 in the fourth. An RBI single by Shohei Ohtani to make it 4-2 in the fifth. That would end Manaea's day at 5 innings pitched, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts on 85 pitches. Manaea's velo sat at 92-93 and top 95 miles an hour, registering 9 total whiffs, prioritizing his sinker at 34% usage. The Dodgers went on to tie the game following 2 costly errors by third baseman Joey Wendell to make it 4-4 in the sixth. But in the seventh, a struggling lefty Lindor finally broke out with a huge 2-run shot to give the Mets the lead. The Mets would plate insurance in the eighth and the ninth to lead the orange and blue to a game 1 victory. On Saturday afternoon, Jose Budo would make his third start of the year. The Mets offense would attack first on a Francisco Lindor RBI double to make it 1-0 in the first, but LA would fight back as Freddie Freeman would tie the game on an RBI single in the bottom of the inning. Fast forward to the fourth, Starling Marte would put the Mets in front with an RBI single to make it 2-1. Jose Budo would run in and out of trouble the entire game, and in the fifth, he would get pulled from the contest as he labored through 4 1/3 innings pitched, 3 hits, 2 earned runs, 5 walks, 6 strikeouts on 95 pitches. Budo's fastball sat at 93-94 and top 96 miles an hour, registering 9 total whiffs and stranding 15 total base runners to end his day. Tie game in the sixth, the red-hot Starling Marte smashes a huge 3-run homer to straightaway center to give the Mets the lead once again 5-2. The Dodgers would make it a 1-run ball game in the bottom of the inning on a Freddie Freeman 2-run single, but the call for insurance was answered by Francisco Lindor in the eighth with an RBI single to make it 6-4 Mets. Edwin Diaz would come in the eighth in a tight spot, walking the tightrope with back-to-back walk, but sprung back to strike out Teoscar Hernandez and Max Muncy to strand the bases loaded. Reed Garrett would come in for the ninth and struck out the side on 13 pitches to notch his first MLB career save and secure the Mets' fifth consecutive series victory. On Sunday afternoon, the ball was given to Adrian Hauser, and he got rocked in four innings of work. 7 hits, 8 earned runs, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts on 81 pitches. Hauser's velocity sat at 93-94 and top 95, registering 4 total whiffs and inducing a big whopping 0 ground balls to end the worst outing of any Mets starter this season. Dodgers ace Tyler Glasnow went on to silence the Mets offense for 8 innings with a gem of a performance as the Dodgers snapped the Mets' 6-game winning streak with a 10-0 Laffer win. The Orange and Blue are now 12-9, winning 12 of their last 16 and 3 games back in third place in the National League East. The Mets will continue their West Coast trip on Monday night for a 3-game set in San Francisco with Jose Quintana on the mound for game one.
For me, the big takeaway, seeing Lindor wake up, that was massive because, you know, like we talked about, the struggles were one thing, but it's more so my biggest gripe was where he's hitting in the order. Like, if a guy's struggling, okay, you know, normally you put him to the bottom of the field, but with a guy like this, he was still batting third no matter what. And with how well Starling Marte was playing, especially in this series, it was important that the guys behind him were able to drive him in. And that's what you saw, especially in that first game, or in both games, honestly, in the 2 games the Mets won that they actually scored runs, where Lindor was the one driving in Marte. That was huge. And I think, you know, seeing the way the Dodgers managed game two of the series, which is so fascinating to me, they used, what was it, like 8 pitchers maybe? Almost their entire bullpen. They brought in their closer while down in the 8th inning. Like, the Dodgers, this game, it meant a lot to them. Like, the fact that the Dodgers, a team with that kind of payroll.
It was their world series.
Exactly. It's supposed to be the opposite, Mookie had said. But, you know, the Dodgers had put so much into that game. They wanted that game bad. And the Mets still come away with it. I just thought that was super impressive. And, you know, the guy I talked about last week, DJ Stewart, he was awesome in those games. I mean, getting the sac fly, hitting the huge home run off Yamamoto. You know, again, just like, you know, Harrison Bader, he was good in that first game for sure. Like, it just, you have, again, all these different guys contributing that you don't expect. That really was the key. And again, you know, the bullpen, it's how important is it to have Edwin Diaz back? I mean, this guy, he just changes everything. You know, if the Mets actually want to, like, get somewhere, these are the kind of teams you have to beat. And again, I'm just very impressed with how many different guys stepped up in this series as well. The way they're just able to carry it over, I thought was really impressive. And you know, again, another shout-out goes to Reed Garrett because when he threw, it was like over 30 pitches in the first game, I was not expecting him to be back for the second game. I didn't think he would. I thought, you know, a lot of times when you see a guy do 30 pitches, they usually get the next day off. So for him to come in there and get that save in a big game like that, I thought that was really big for him. Just because, you know, it's one thing to kind of do it in the 5th inning and the 6th inning when your team is behind. Like, those aren't really high-stress innings. But, you know, in the 9th inning, saving a game in L.A. against the Dodgers, that's a high-pressure situation. And he was up to the task, you know. And I think that he really showed me something as well with the inning did not go ideal the night before when Joey Wendell was making all those errors. I mean, even despite that, the Mets were able to overcome that, you know, getting those big hits from Francisco Lindor and what seemed like such a close game, again, how good they are in late innings, being able to just pull away in that first game was also just really nice to see. So, I mean, they're, again, like I've been saying in the recaps, there's just a lot to like, you know, when you see this many guys being positive factors to the team winning. I mean, that's what you need. I mean, that's how you win, especially in a sport like baseball. You need so many guys to contribute in order to actually be a successful team. And that's what we've seen. You know, I mean, we even talked about it that, like, with someone like DJ Stewart, I was expecting him to be gone, you know, once. And now when JD Martinez gets here, you better not send out DJ Stewart. You know, I mean, that's the way I'm looking. I'm like, this guy has got to stay. He's been a huge pinch hitter in a lot of these situations. I think, you know, once you exchange JD Martinez with Zach Short, I mean, not to, you know, throw too much offense to the guy, but when you make that swap, that's like, oh my God, what an upgrade. So, and I think that's probably the most encouraging thing is that this team can and probably and this team could get better. That's the good thing, is that, like, in theory, on paper, you add in Kodai Senga, you add in JD Martinez, and then who knows if these other young guys step in. Like, hey, Christian Scott gets called up and he takes Adrian Hauser's spot in the rotation. And it's like, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, I don't know, maybe Drew Gilbert. Because, like, there's like these other scenarios where this team gets even better, despite how well they've been playing. And again, the way they've been able to do it while not at full strength, that's awesome. I mean, that is just, that's really good to see.
I mean, listen, we've talked about this all offseason, all spring training. There is no way the Mets can lose. There really is just no way the Mets can lose. They can lose ball games. They can stink, and then they can get a bunch of assets at the deadline if they stink. If they win, they win. And they can continue some sustainable winning and try out more young guys and, you know, with tons of payroll coming off. I mean, they really just don't have any scenario where they can lose in terms of looking to 2025. You know, the Mets have really just been playing very impressive baseball. Now, the only blemish of the week in games has obviously been Tyler Glasnow.
Hold on, let me just say this too. The freaking Dodgers had James Paxton as the projected starter and then waited until the second game to, like, does it mean that much to you, Dodgers, that you have to sit James Paxton and be like, oh, wait, no, we need Tyler Glasnow? I mean, this is a guy who's just coming back from an injury last season. You mean to tell him that you're not going to give him his extra day of rest because you need to beat the Mets? Is it that serious? We are in April, folks. We are in April, and the Dodgers are like, oh my God, we have to use all our bullpen. We have to make sure that our ace doesn't get as much rest as we thought he should because we need to beat the Mets. Like, it meant that much to you? And we just don't usually Adrian Hauser at you. Like, really?
And listen, the Dodgers are a better team than the Mets. They are a better team. At the end of the day, I mean, listen, if Mookie is saying that this is going to be everyone's World Series, Mookie, you were 0 for 12 in the postseason last year, my man. I mean, come on. If you want to open your mouth, I got some evidence for you. But
just, it was weird to me. I was very surprised. I was like, why are the Dodgers, like, going all out here? Like, why?
I mean, maybe this was their World Series. I don't know.
They managed it like it was. In all seriousness, like, all the games the Mets have played this year, I have never seen a team be like, oh my gosh, you know, this guy. It was like the three batter minimum rule was like to a T. It's like, okay, this guy faced three guys, now we go to a lefty. Okay, this guy faced three guys, now we go to the righty. Like, it was like, whoa, Dave Roberts, relax. Like, it's not that serious. This is April. Like, I mean, I don't know. That was really, really bizarre.
Here's the thing. The Mets, they have hit fairly well. They have played all around good baseball recently. Tyler Glasnow, whether you like him or not, whether you think he's not as good as you think he is, the man's an ace. That man is a frontline starter when he is healthy. And he did what aces do, and that being he dominated. They just didn't really have an answer for him. And, you know, do I fully blame Adrian Hauser? Not really, because the offense didn't do anything.
I mean, I think nothing is like, you know, a one-hit ball, two-hit ball. But, I mean, seven hits, it's just the Mets didn't capitalize. You know, they just didn't, like, catch in when they had the opportunities.
There was no timely hitting in that game. Yeah. And listen, it's a tough pitcher to face. It's Tyler Glasnow. And that's the main thing that does fear me with this type of lineup is, you know, elite pitching such as Tyler Glasnow. It stinks that it ended like that, but overall, it can't really take away from the good baseball that the Mets have played. And, you know, I think that, you know, Sean Manaea, really good bounce back, still got a little snake bitten by the walks, put us in some tough situations. But Jose Budo, I give credit to him, to be honest, because that is not an easy lineup to face. Again, mainly most pitchers, like 99% of pitchers, when you walk that many batters, when that many base runners come your way, especially with, you know, the lack of experience with Jose Budo, he's had a few cups of coffee here, but he hasn't been here long. You know, anybody else would have probably folded, but Jose Budo kept his composure, kept it as slow as he possibly could, and he worked around a lot of good Dodgers hitters, and he was able to get strikeouts at the right time, and, you know, it was piecing together a really good win. And then, I mean, Adrian Hauser, I mean, I was not expecting him to be frontline piece or middle rotation guy. I did not expect him to be walking as many guys as he has been. Maybe there is a consideration to take him out of the rotation when Senga comes back, or maybe even earlier. McGill, we haven't had an update on him yet. he might come back, maybe something like that. Lucchese has been good in AAA. I mean, that's a hitting environment that you need to really pitch well in to be very impressive. Maybe there is a possibility that they do a six-man rotation without Adrian Hauser in it if he continues to struggle. He's had some flashes of good. He's had some flashes of bad. That's kind of what we see as from a five-starter. The fourth inning, he took us completely out of the game. We had no answer for Tyler Glasnow to start the game, and we weren't getting back 10 freaking runs against anybody. I don't care how bad the Dodgers bullpen has been, how good we've been in late games. We're not coming back from 10-0. He didn't even give us a chance.
I mean, he had a similar start to the Braves where they had, like, what was it, like six consecutive singles or something like that. He just, like, he's a guy that...
he shouldn't be pitching to these types of teams.
Yeah. His sinker just, it wasn't sinking. Like, everything was up. I mean, he didn't get the ball down at all. He didn't get a single ground ball. Like, I don't know. I think, first of all, this team has a tough time fielding ground balls. So, I don't know. I just don't think he's a good fit for the team. I mean, like, what matchup do you really utilize him in, you know? I mean, and here's the other thing that bothers me, too, is that, and this goes for the whole team, but if you're going to be walking the number nine hitter, like, what are you doing? Like, he can't get anybody out. And then it's like he gets to the bottom of the order and he's just walking. Like, they have no chance. Like, absolutely no chance. And that's been a problem. That's like, if I had, that's my only gripe with the pitching. The walks are one thing. That's a problem. But the number nine hitter walks are insane. And it's all the time.
There's no reason you shouldn't attack the number nine hitter.
And it's even more exaggerated with the Dodgers, who have the greatest top three you're going to face.
It's hard to get away with it.
I'm hoping, and I thought about it, I was like, is the walks thing a strategy at this point? Because I think the way baseball has changed, teams are so aggressive with swinging and, you know, there's so much more chase than there used to be. I mean, strikeouts are just up way more than they were, again, in my day. But I think that, are you trying to pitch out the zone to just kind of, because that's the thing, they've prevented the long ball. They've done that well, but they walk everybody. So I'm like, is it some sort of strategy where you're purposely trying to get that chase to make sure that they're not going over the wall? Because that's the only reason I can think to have this many walks, because it is just a crazy number.
You know what the problem is, but I'm not going to tell you. I mean, I'm not, because they are number one in ERA. They're number one in right. I'm not even going to. No.
The guy that should have the biggest walk problem, Adam Ottavino, is the guy walking the least amount of batters. That's what I can't figure out. Is I'm like, if anyone would be walking people, I'd expect it to be him, and he's not. I'm like, why is everyone else walking people?
Pitch tunneling is something that is very, you need to have all of your weapons going well, and you need to be able to get chases, because it's really hard to just attack hitters and expect to get a whiff every single time, no matter how fast you throw. And you need that certain stuff, that certain breaking stuff, that certain off-speed stuff, along with some velocity to get, you know, the strikeouts, which obviously are the best defense. You know, you need chaseable stuff, things that tunnel, something that's in the strike zone, and when it breaks over the plate, it's not in the strike zone. And, you know, that all comes with really good command. The command has been like 50-50 with the Mets this year. The control obviously has been an issue. I'm not saying that this pitching staff has control issues. I'm just saying that there's a lot of uncompetitive pitches to call this a perfect pitching staff, to call this a top five pitching staff that's been top in ERA or whatever. Like, there has been other reasons as to why they're giving up runs and why they're putting themselves in these situations. They just have not been caught by it yet. And that's what has been very suspicious about this team. And, you know, there's are some red flags with this rotation. We've talked about it before. But, you know, the walks just have to be toned down. And, you know, could it be the catcher? Maybe it is the catcher. Can't really solve that right now, as we can get into the next story of this week. And it's no secret that the Mets have been playing really good baseball, but there is one piece of sour news that does really sting. The Mets' rising star catcher, Francisco Alvarez, has suffered a torn ligament in his left thumb, which will require surgery. The 22-year-old first felt discomfort after jamming his thumb into the bag while stealing second base during Wednesday afternoon's game. But fast forward 2 days later, Alvarez re-aggravated it, landing awkwardly on the base pass during Friday night's game in LA. Carlos Mendoza specified that the timetable currently is unknown for Alvarez, but the Mets are fully confident he will return this season. The following day, Alvarez stated that he likely will be out 6 to 8 weeks, which would put him on a return timeline for early to mid-June at the earliest. Alvarez has been placed on the 15-day injured list as the Mets have called up longtime tenured catcher Tomas Nito as the corresponding move.
This was very upsetting. I mean, me personally, obviously being a huge Francisco Alvarez fan is one thing, but I think for the team itself, I mean, we've talked about, you know, there's very few really good hitting catchers. And, you know, the Mets having a homegrown one that's so young is such a nice luxury. And it's such an important part of why they could be a successful team. But to lose him for an extended period of time is, it's going to be tough to follow because, you know, not has he been good offensively, but he's been good defensively as well. And I think, you know, seeing more Omar Narvaez is going to be rough. But on the flip side, seeing Tomas Nito actually throw out a runner, the first runner being thrown out all season for the Mets and ending that ridiculous streak, is encouraging to see. I think, you know, it'll, again, if Narvaez could just be the defensive catcher he's supposed to be, not even the offensive catcher, but he just be the defensive catcher he was supposed to be, you could be more of a traditional team that, oh, you know, we just have a glove, just a good glove catcher, not necessarily a great hitter. Like, that, plenty of teams have that. That's not uncommon, especially even with good teams. But for Narvaez to be struggling on both sides of the plate, it would just be kind of interesting to see Tomas Nito get more games over him, even though he should. But with what the contracts are, that would just be a not usual thing to see. So I don't know if that will happen. Maybe. I think if the performance merits it, it could. But, you know, for the time being, they don't really have another choice. I mean, it's not like they could just kind of – it's going to be a lot of Narvaez and Nito. And it's tough because they are nowhere close to the hitter Alvarez is at the plate, just what he could do for your team. Just losing a bat like that, it's a big loss. And, you know, I think that with the way this team has played, they could overcome it. I feel like, you know, they've kind of shown that mentality the first month of the season. So I don't see why that would change. Again, it's a big loss, but, you know, it's a long season. 2 months isn't the end of the season, you know. So there's still light at the end of the tunnel where he could still come back, still be a contributor for him, hopefully in meaningful games.
We all know that the guy wants to play. I mean, we all know the guy wants to stay on the field no matter what.
He stayed in the game afterwards anyway. He didn't catch the next half inning, but he still stayed on the field.
He did stay in the game because the guy's hungry. He wants to play. He's young. I love that about him. I love the energy of the kid. Is there a strong possibility that maybe, yeah, he said he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Is there a strong possibility where he comes back in 5 weeks because he's freaking nuts? Maybe.
It's tough with that position. That's the hardest part is the position he plays. Like, you need that left hand to catch.
That's what I was right. Yep.
200 pitches.
He needs the left hand.
Like, if Edwin Diaz is throwing you 99 miles an hour, you got no ligament in the thumb. Ouch.
And listen, I saw that happen actually live at the game in Pittsburgh after that incident he had. He dropped a few. Like, he was having a trouble gripping that glove a little bit, and he kind of re-aggravated that a little bit. So, you know, maybe there's a possibility where it's a little bit longer. Maybe he does, you know, get some DH reps.
Yeah, and last thing, like, could he come back sooner as a DH? Like, that's something to consider. But again, you have JD Martinez. Like, then JD's like out of the lineup because he doesn't own a glove. I think I got it. So what if you put JD Martinez at first, move Alonso to third base? There's your right-handed hitting third base.
Yeah, he did play third base. Yeah, he was a third baseman. Jesus Christ. Narvaez and Nito, that's just kind of how it's going to be. It's going to be like that until Alvarez becomes healthy. If one of them gets hurt, you're probably going to either see Austin Allen get called up or something like that from AAA, who I personally think has some decent amount of pop as compared to Narvaez or Nito, who basically, who the hell knows what they're going to give you offensively. And I think he's a decent defender as well. They also traded for that Joe Hudson guy, too. I got him for cash. He's 32 years old. He's a defensive catcher. That's about it. Doesn't hit at all. So, I mean, I understand that Mets fans want to have a catcher up here that's competent, maybe replace something that Alvarez gave you. For a majority of organizations, if you have a star catcher, you have a star catcher. The depth chart after that, it usually sucks. I mean, the backup catchers stink. They are not going to be a star. They are usually a defensive guy, an older guy, who you know, probably wouldn't even bat his weight. Offensive catchers are not very common, even though they've risen a little bit with the Alvarezes and the Adleys of the world, but you take what you can get from that. I'd say that the biggest loss is obviously the defense. And with the concerns that we do have with this pitching staff of the walks, the disparity in between catchers we've seen so far, even though pitchers do love throwing to Nito, it's a loss. It's a big loss to this lineup. And, you know, we know that this guy's going to be a future part to this team, you know, once he gets it together as a full, complete player, you know, and gets the consistency going. And, you know, he is going to be the future catcher of this franchise, you know, unless there's something, you know, sporadic happens. And, you know, speaking of other young catchers, Mets fans, we are not calling up Kevin Parada. It's not happening.
There's not people actually saying
that. Oh, no, there are.
Oh, my God.
Like, yes, I understand. He's 23 years old. He's older than Alvarez. Not every catcher comes up here like Alvarez, okay? Not to mention Kevin Parada last year, at the high A level, he was the worst defensive catcher statistically out of the entire league. That is not happening. You do not stunt the growth of a catcher. That is not a position that you want to mess with. There's a reason why we brought in Omar Narvaez, because of Alvarez's uncertainty of how he would adjust to the major leagues as insurance. Kevin Parada is in Double A right now. He's struggling at the plate right now. The defense still has to get better. There's a strong possibility that you don't see him until either the end of next year or the year after that. It's not going to happen. Prospects are suspect until they actually do prove it in the major league. And as of right now, he's not an option. Prospects are not an option until they make themselves an option. So unless they bring in some kind of catcher by amazing magic, this is what we got right now. We're just really hoping that the pitching staff continues their consistency with the loss of Alvarez behind the plate. As for the offense, you have your automatic nine-hole hitter now. One of the top contributors to the Mets' success in this young season has continued to be the depth on the roster, especially the Mets' outfield depth, which has been reliable offensively, defensively, and more. Across the Mets, four primary outfielders in Starling Marte, Brandon Nimmo, Harrison Bader, and Tyrone Taylor, the Mets lineup is deeper than it has been in a while. Mets outfielders are slashing .275, .350, .412 with 8 home runs combined, 38 runs batted in, 13 stolen bases, with a .118 weighted runs created plus, combining for 1.3 wins above replacement. If you want to count DJ Stewart as an outfielder, he's also given the Mets some great power protection, pre-JD Martinez with 3 home runs and an OPS in the 900s across 44 plate appearances. With the top bats still trying to find their footing in April, the Mets have also recently received offensive contributions from Jeff McNeil, Brett Beatty, Omar Narvaez, and Joey Wendell, who have all plated runs in high leverage situations so far this season.
To me, the big one is Starling Marte. I mean, we talk about, like, okay, this team struggled last year. What's the big difference between last year and this year? It's Marte. I mean, seeing him, again, he's still not quite 2022 level, but he's still providing much more value than he was last year. I mean, he was a negative last year. This year, he is certainly a positive. So I think seeing that by itself is really key. But, you know, right now, all the outfielders are kind of beating their projections. Like, obviously, Harrison Bader is doing better than anyone could have projected offensively. We'll see if that stays. Same thing with Tyrone Taylor. He's beating his projections. You know, DJ Stewart. Like, all these guys are just performing better than expected. And it's something that, you know, this team really needed. Like, you know, they added these guys in Taylor and Bader in the offseason, hoping to give them a little more. Really, it was more so from a defensive standpoint, give them some help in that department. But they've been able to provide it in both areas, which has been really key. When, you know, we've talked about the outfield depth has been a problem for a while. So seeing that change is big, but I think it goes more so than, as you touched on, just more so the everyone contributing, like we said. Like, you're just having so many guys that you didn't expect just to kind of play better. Like McNeil, he's another who still is not the best version of him or second best version of him, but it's better than last year. You know what I mean? So it's like, as long as you're getting those improvements, that's what's key. And for them to just being productive players, being positive, being above league average across the board, is really just what's kind of making this team kind of fire on all cylinders, so to speak. So it's been good to see. And, you know, the thing was that they were supposed to be here for run prevention and for, you know, their fielding abilities. Fielding still hasn't been good. I mean, Marte had an ugly one today where he was just not looking good moving laterally. It's a weird play. Obviously, Joey Wendell, the routine plays just can't make them. There's still quite a few mistakes in the field. So, again, these guys are here for defense, but it's actually their offense that's picking up. And I really don't anticipate Bader and Taylor staying at this level. Even Wendell, as much as you despise him, he's like a 118 WRC plus right now. A super small sample size. So, you know, and DJ Stewart came into the game with over 1,000 OPS. Like, that stuff isn't going to stay. But I think as long as these guys, like I said, are just being above league average, the Mets will be a good team. It's just I hope that the fall off, once it happens, isn't too drastic. And it's not like the 0-5 team that we saw. You know, they just need to find, like, some happy medium between the team that loses 5 in a row and wins 5 in a row. If they can just find some middle ground, they'll be all right.
At this current moment, Starling Marte, of course, is full-on standout of he has just been the spark plug that we obviously need him to be, and he's just been providing so much offensively that I just did not expect. I mean, we saw him in that LA series. He is so red hot right now that there are outside pitches that he is hitting over 100 miles an hour right now. He is just been swinging a great bat. As for his defense, I just wanted to bring this up. Please move him to left field. Please move Starling Marte to left field. Listen, I know Tyrone Taylor or Nimmo should be playing left field or whatever. That was the case. I talked about this with the Mets outfield before the season started. I think I was solo for this one. I want to see the Mets, obviously, rotate Marte, Bader, and Nimmo in any position possible except Marte in center field. I don't want to see Marte in center field. I do want to see Marte move to left field at this current point because his defense has become a liability. It really has. His defense is a liability. And listen, I'm not really saying that as a knock on the guy. He's 35 years old. I mean, those legs are not going to be the same legs out there in the outfield. He's still not running at 100% either on the base pass. There are still some limits as of right now, and I think that with the arm that Starling Marte does still possess, it's still solid. Put the guy in left field, please. He's played left field before. Also, to keep him healthy, I'm okay with putting Nimmo in center field. Again, he's played some center field as well. We expected Bader to be playing center field every single day. Nimmo's played a decent amount of center field as well. Starling Marte, he gives you value in pretty much every category in a spark plug type of way. It may be erratic, but it's a spark plug type of way. If he can't provide that type of defense, when we're talking about run prevention being a very important thing, a lot of pitchers pitching to contact, we have seen some costly mistakes already from Starling Marte. We saw it last year as well. He's getting older. They have to accept that a 35-year-old right fielder probably isn't a good idea. Now, as for Harrison Bader, this is kind of just goes off of history, I'd say, with the Mets. The Mets finally have a defensive first outfielder who actually can hit a fastball. It really is a miracle because when you look at it, the defensive first type of guys, they literally look so overmatched against high profile velocity. You know, is there a little bit too much swing and miss, a little too much chase with Harrison Bader? Yes. That's a bottom of the lineup type of guy. I will say one thing, that man's clutch. He is clutch. He comes through when you need him to come through. I understand, you know, we were skeptical about this, but I don't think he's going to stay at that 300 mark, even though I don't give a shit. From the bottom of the lineup, he makes it deeper. Do I want to see him in the top half of the lineup? No. But overall, for the role that he was brought in to do, he's been really, really good. He's definitely exceeded expectations. I love Tyrone Taylor. I think I said this at the beginning. The guy's a gamer. He loves to swing. He loves to put the ball in play. He loves to wreak havoc everywhere. Pulls fly balls all the time. Pulls line drives. I love that. Again, another guy from the bottom of the lineup that has really built this foundation up as well. The situational hitting from this outfield in general has been really good. If the double play is in order with one of these guys up, I'm expecting them to either drive something in or lift the ball, advance the runner, something like that. I'm not seeing that many opportunities for the Mets to just grounded to a double play with these four guys at the plate as of right now. Brandon Nimmo, we know, hasn't been Brandon Nimmo, but he's still been the disciplined Brandon Nimmo. Good pitch selection, not chasing as much, not striking out, walking a lot. He's getting his quality ABs. Do I want to see more contact because he is pretty much underperforming a lot of his, you know, expected numbers, a lot of his, you know, hard hit rates and a lot of things? Like, he definitely could be. Yes. But it's Nimmo. He's going to figure it out.
I think with Nimmo, he swung at the first pitch to open ball games.
He did.
More this month than he's on a pace to just shatter what he normally does. So I think being able to adapt and kind of change the book, so to speak, or the game plan or the tablet, whatever they use to kind of scout the players as far as game plan, anything you can do to kind of change the game plan of another team, I'm always in for. I think you never want to be too predictable. So I love that about Nimmo. But to your point, I love the amount of sacrifice flies that we see with this team as a total. I don't know where they rank in strikeouts, but I don't think it's high.
They're low in strikeouts.
I would think so, because you're right. I do see a lot of that. There is a lot of the balls put in play, but I mean, there was even a play today with Bader, and they must have lost 10-0, but he beat out a ground ball that should have been a tailor-made double play, you know, because of his speed. But the one thing I do like about Bader, I'll give him this, I like his energy. You know, when he gets a big hit late, you see him just getting super fired up. You see the team getting fired up. Again, I just think that kind of fits this whole team's just high energy, never give up, just like these late games, like tight games, just fighting and putting together good at-bats, line drives. Like, he's been part of them. You know, he's been part of a lot of those like late big game hits. And he's one of the reasons why they have those really high numbers in those late innings. So I think that kind of energy is really just, it's contagious. And you see it throughout the team. So I'll give him that. I do like his energy. I think it definitely has been a positive impact on the rest of the guys.
I think that Bader is, at the end of the day, he's a solid lower third of the order type of player. I don't think that he's going to sustain this, but I don't think that we're very far off from what you're going to see from Harrison Bader as to where, you know, this guy is going to be able, you know, find his pitches, put them in play, make solid contact. And that's what is really good about him. He's a defensive outfielder, but the quality of contact is really good with him. He knows how to lift the ball. He's not an ant killer. He can do and provide a lot of things for this team. I'd say that, you know, the defense it speaks for itself again. This entire roster, the Mets as a team, not as Alonso's the whole team or Lindor's the whole team or Nimmo's are the only one doing anything. The Mets as a team are holding down the fort until they are fully healthy. And that is what has been winning them games. What I said before this season even started, Stearns got you depth for a reason. He got you your depth to fill out this roster, to fill roles, and they can find a way to maximize that. That's what they are doing right now. At the end of the day, the Mets outfield has been very impressive. It hasn't been outstanding, but I would say as a collective unit, those four guys, they've all been above average, which makes a well above average outfield. Quantity, quality, there you go. Bada bing, bada boom, David Stearns. So although the Mets star closer Edwin Diaz has been good since returning from knee surgery, he still has not been the top tier Edwin Diaz just yet. Even with a slight measure drop in dominance, Diaz has still dazzled, posting a 1.17 earned run average, a 3.36 fielding independent pitching, striking out 40% of batters across 7.2 innings pitched. Not bad at all, but there has been a noticeable drop in velocity so far this season. In his historic 2022 campaign, Diaz averaged a career best 99.1 miles an hour on his fastball. In 2024, he is averaging just 97.2. When asked about the dip in velocity, Mets president of baseball operations David Stearns stated that he is not concerned about Diaz's velocity, clarifying that it's in a normal range while on back-to-back outings earlier this season. Although the slider velocity has dipped as well, Diaz has been able to touch the low 90s, registering the same amount of whiffs as he did two seasons ago. Before the freak injury in the WBC, Diaz signed a record-setting 5-year, $102 million contract extension last offseason with the Mets to make him the highest-paid reliever in baseball history to this day.
When you spend a full year off, and especially with how dominant he was when he was fully healthy, like, that's not just going to happen instantly. I think that he was throwing a little harder against the Dodgers than he was in his previous outings. So I was encouraged by that. You know, I think I hope we see the triple digits again. That would be great. But I think overall, he's still been effective and just still a really good pitcher as far as, you know, what was pitching. Don't allow runs and, you know, close the door. Like, he's been doing that. You know what I mean? Like, when the first, all the situations they put him in, he's still technically been lights out. Even if he's not as, like you said, it's not as dominant. It's not like, an insane strikeout percentage like it was before, but it's still just a really good reliever, which is what they need from him. I'm not worried by it because I think, you know, as long as he still finds ways to be effective, like he still has a really sharp slider, you know, he's still a guy that you feel confident with when he comes into the game, that he's going to, you know, protect the lead or keep the game where it is, whatever situation you put him in. And what I've also liked is the Mets, the way they've utilized him. You know, I think to go back to the Dodgers game, the second game of the series, I felt like if that was middle of the season a couple years ago, I feel like he'd go six outs there. Whereas this year they said, okay, you got your three, you're good. And I think they've been smart with, you know, not having him pitch like a ton of days in a row. Like, I just feel like they've been just kind of really working him back in a very good way. I really like the way they've used him. He's had to warm up more than I would like. You know, I'm looking at guys like Jake Diekman, stop walking people near up five runs and things like that. You know, he's had to get warmed up a little too much into games that he wasn't supposed to be brought in. But I always go back to it. When Yoan Lopez had a huge lead against the Braves, Edwin Diaz still had to come to those games because the guys the Mets had couldn't get out of it. This bullpen is better overall than that team a couple years ago to where these guys are able to get out of it. I think a guy like Jorge Lopez has helped out a lot for being able to kind of use Edwin Diaz the way he has, obviously Reed Garrett. So I think that if these other guys in the bullpen do perform well, you'll be able to kind of get this version of Edwin Diaz. We don't have to overuse him, overwork him. You can kind of really have him work his way back in to kind of get him to form.
When I look at what's happening in terms of Edwin Diaz coming back, it really is just the process of him just ramping back to what he was. And he is really close to it. He'll get there. He 100% is going to get there. Obviously, I have so much trust in the guy. I mean, I'm his biggest fan in the entire world. In terms of that game yesterday against the Dodgers, I would have given him the ninth. If he said that I was good to go, I would have given him the ninth. I understand wanting to hold him back, of course. He's coming off of the injury. And, you know, if there is any concerns from any Mets fans that are looking at Edwin Diaz, he's not as dominant as he was. You know, there's a little bit less strikeouts as to what they're seeing. You're seeing Diaz currently at, like, I don't know, the 70th percentile outcome. And once again, I mean, let's not forget, Edwin Diaz is a very horizontally main pitcher. In order to do that, you need to have a really strong back foot as a pitcher. Get that extra velocity, get that extra spice on the slider. Well, that back foot is his right foot. His right foot is connected to his knee. That's his right knee that he really, really needs, that he just had surgery on. So the fact that he is touching 98, 97 already, I think it's a good sign. Not to mention the stuff in terms of spin, VAA vertical approach angle, in terms of pitch shape, it's the exact same. He is the exact same pitcher, just throwing a little bit less harder. The control's been a little bit off, but again, he needs that back foot in order to have that full-on consistency. And the fact that you are seeing this type of Edwin Diaz as he's still trying to grab his footing, the biggest blemish so far has been a Vinny home run that has been a non-barrel. He's the same guy, all right? He is the exact same guy. He just needs to ramp up. He's coming back from an injury. It's not an arm injury. Yes, it's not an arm injury, but he needs that back leg. He needs it, and he's recovering from it. He's going to be fine. It's April. We still have a full season to go. I am 100% confident that he will get back to that level that he was in 2022. Was he unstoppable? Yes. But I know that he can be that. Now it's time for everybody's favorite segment, Studs and Duds. One player that has played fairly well that we want to give a huge shout out to. And then one player who needs to step it up. Frank, I'll start with you. Who's your stud?
The way the week was going, I was actually going to do something that I think is a bit of a unwritten rule in Mets Weekly. I was considering doubling up on my stud, which I don't think it's ever happened in Mets Weekly history. DJ Stewart is definitely on my list because he did have another really solid week. I want to give him credit, but it has to be Marte. You know, I just think that it's more so that he just played well, but it was the hits that he got were big hits. I mean, the home run he hit against the Dodgers, dead center. What was that? It was like 430 or whatever. Like, that was a bomb. You know what I mean? Like, this guy was hitting the tar off the ball in Los Angeles. It's so exciting because, again, when we talked about the difference from 2 years ago, Marte, to last year, Marte, to get this, when we talked about the concerns of year three and year four, I just think it's really exciting because we know what healthy Marte means to the lineup. Seeing him play this well was, I just think it's a really, really encouraging sign. And I feel like it just has like really big implications going forward. That it's just something that I'm just very happy.
Yeah. I mean, who is this man? Like, literally, I did not expect it at all. I was expecting the worst from a 35-year-old Starling Marte. They said he looks fully healthy. They said they weren't going to worry in spring training. We're like, oh, well, we'll see it before we see it. And what the hell? Where did this come from? I mean, this guy is just on fire right now. Hottest hitter in the lineup by far. For my stud, I am going to bring up someone that I don't think anybody is talking about, and I think that we really do need to start talking about him. I did have a little bit of concern in the velo drop with him in spring training, but it seems like he's regained it a little bit. Out of the bullpen, undoubtedly has been nails. Jorge Lopez has been phenomenal, and nobody's talking about that. Brooks Raley's been good. Ottavino's been solid. Edwin Diaz has been good. Everybody in that bullpen's been good. Reed Garrett's been the standout.
Not Michael Tompkins.
He doesn't count. That dude doesn't care. He's an NPC.
I mean,
not a real person. Not a real person. He doesn't exist. Jorge Lopez has been really, really good out of that bullpen.
He's one of the few guys that actually will get work on back-to-back days, which a lot of guys don't. And they've used him in a lot of different innings, too, which I think is something to also definitely keep track of.
He's just another guy giving Carlos Mendoza, a young first-year manager, a lot of options out of the bullpen. And he's been very, very solid. Inducing the ground balls, just like the sinker ball he is. He's been great. Now let's get to the duds. I'd say that there's a limited pile of this one because it's been a very impressive week.
I mean, there's one guy that really it's Adrian Hauser. I mean, it has to be. And it's not just how bad he was against the Dodgers. It's the fact they walked five guys against the Pirates earlier in the week. You know, I mean, it's just like the team, in order to win Adrian Hauser's starts, has to fight for their life. You know what I mean? Like, he gives the other team so many opportunities to score that your offense has to be on another level in order to just stay competitive with his starts at this point. Again, he was brought in to be back half of the rotation piece, but he's not even that. Like, we talk about this guy, he's on the pace to be out of the rotation. But I mean, that's how bad he's been. Like, at least be competitive. Like we say, at least attack number nine hitters. Like, he can't do that. Like, he can't do the simple stuff. And if he's not going to be giving up ground balls, if he's not going to be striking out batters, well, what is he doing? You know, and what he's doing is walking people and giving up lasers. And that is just the two worst combinations that you could do as a pitcher. And I just think that right now, he's just an awful fit. I mean, and it really, it stands out so much when you look at the rest of the rotation and the rest of the bullpen, and then you have this guy, and he looks like he doesn't belong on the team. Like, these guys are all, like, over here, and he's just over there. Like, I mean, that's how it's been, honestly, with the way he started. So I've been very disappointed in him the whole season, honestly, and I think it really stood out this week when they were on pace for such an amazing week, and he just, like, gave him a really bad end to it.
Again, I don't see him leaving the rotation
anytime soon, but I'm saying that at some point
these blow-ups, if he's you know, if he's not able to go deep into, if he's not even able to go five innings, I mean, well, what is the point at that point? Again, these are just like low-hanging fruit, but like, I don't know, Zach Short, I guess I'll go with him. Like, time's up, man.
Does he have a hit yet?
Two, a walk. I don't know. He's done really nothing.
Oh, he does. He has one hit. I'm sorry. He has one hit.
I think it was against the Brewers. That far away. But no, I guess, you know, it's a low-hanging fruit here. But, you know, who else are you going to put out there? Michael Tonkin, Omar Narvaez, Grant Hartwig, who just got here and gave up a home run today. Like, who are you going to put in there?
I mean, by his standards, maybe Alonso, like, compared to how he was the first couple of weeks. But again, it's like, we're not killing the guys. Like you said, they were so good this week. Again, and like we've talked about, as a team, that you don't really see those guys standing out. I was like, wow, this guy's bringing the team down. He's holding them back. Like, this team has been that good from top to bottom.
Your rapid fire stories for this week is the corresponding move for Tomas Nito. The Mets have designated left-handed pitcher Colton Ingram for assignment. Ingram was claimed off of waivers by the Mets from Detroit in late February. Mets left-handed pitcher Tyler Jay has cleared waivers and has been outrighted to AAA Syracuse. Jay was designated for assignment as the corresponding move for the reclaiming of Michael Tonkin. The Mets have placed left-handed pitcher Brooks Raley on the 15-day injured list with left elbow inflammation. His MRI revealed no structural damage, and he's expected to miss about 2 weeks. The Mets have recalled right-handed pitcher Grant Hartwig from AAA Syracuse as the corresponding move. Mets pitching prospect Calvin Ziegler will undergo Tommy John surgery. Ziegler is a former second-round pick by the Mets back in 2021 and has only pitched 7 innings in the past 2 seasons. Mets DH J.D. Martinez resumed play on Sunday for the low-A Port St. Lucie Mets. Mets manager Carlos Mendoza stated that they could expect Martinez to be activated on Friday when the Mets take on the Cardinals at Citi Field. Former player and scout Whitey Herzog has passed away at the age of 92. Herzog was known as one of the main architects of the 1969 and 1973 Mets World Series teams. Herzog was also responsible for trading Keith Hernandez to the Mets from St. Louis back in 1983. Parting words for episode number 49. This one you're going to have to search into the database.
That's not
a common off the top of your head one. John Neese,
there you go.
Julio Teheran.
For a day.
Ed Hearn, member of the 1986 team, backup to Gary Carter. He actually signed my baseball glove when I was a kid.
Oh, nice. A few more days of staying up late on the East Coast for us older folks. We get to play San Francisco, so that's gonna be interesting. But you know, I'm looking forward to getting home and seeing JD Martinez. You know, I'm really just excited to see that. I was really pumped up when they got him. I just want to see the impact he's gonna have. I really want to see what the lineup construction is like with him in it, and again, just kind of making that lineup a little deeper. I do hope that he is batting behind Pete Alonso. I hope they are staying true to that, because again, I just want to see the overall impact it would have on the team. So that's what I'm looking forward to, and I just want to see them continue to just kind of string up these series wins as well. You know, the Braves and Phillies have been playing phenomenal. They both were on 6-game winning streaks. Hopefully Texas hangs on by the time you guys are watching this. But the Mets, they kind of just got to control what they can, you know, even though the rest of the division has been playing really well. The Phillies have been playing the White Sox, so it's like, I can't wait till we play the White Sox, you know what I mean? Like, with the strength, like we talk about, with the strength of schedule the Mets have had so far, for them to play this well has been encouraging, so just got to keep doing what they're doing, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they have played really good baseball overall as a really good product for a team that started off 0-5 with, you know, we were drained watching this team for the first 5 games, and then something clicked, and then all of a sudden, they started playing really good baseball. Can we just walk less batters this week? Like, just less, please. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying, okay, maybe this week we've walked, I don't know, 80 batters? That walk 79, okay? Yeah. Just less.
And just less number 9 hitters. That's
number 9 hitters. Stop putting yourselves in crappy situations. But again, that's a minor critique. They've been winning ball games. It's been good. Can't wait to see JD Martinez, because that'll be a little bit more of a finished product with the offense. And also, Brooks Raley went down, which stinks. But I will say, this might be a good chance to call up Nate Lavender right here to get the second lefty in there.
And you know what? And I'm looking at it right now while watching the Braves. Plenty of teams will use 3 left-handers.
I mean, Diekman's been Diekman. But again, give the kid a chance. Why not? You know, this is your chance right here.
If Lavender shows you something, there's nothing, like, it's a good thing to have 3 lefties. Like, yeah, exactly. It gives you more versatility. So I think, listen, if I could have, Nate Lavender, my bullpen over Michael Tonkin and some of the other guys we've seen, I'm good with that. So you know what? Maybe it could be a good opportunity for him. I hope he's the guy that gets called up. It looks like they chose Grant Hartwig instead.
Shaunrie Foley is with the team, so
Shaunrie Foley might be on his way. So again, I think it's a good opportunity, though. I would like to. I think if you were going to try, now would be a good time.
Here's to another good week of Mets baseball. So thank you guys so much for watching, listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, TikTok. We put out content there throughout the week. Also subscribe to the Mets Weekly channel as well. All that great stuff. Mets Frankly post game after every single game. Let's go Mets, and we'll see you guys next time.